Okay, we're in the home of Bill Olson in Kinsley, and it's February 23rd, 2011. I can't get the date right on one of these. Yeah, that's pretty hot now. This is the Kinsley Library, and I'm Joan Weaver doing an interview with Rosetta Graff. And also we have Bill's wife, Betty Olson, in the room. Okay, Bill, what is your full name?
Billy Gerald Olson.
And where do you currently reside? Where do you live?
Liberty County.
And when and where were you born?
I was born right here in this house, in this bedroom right here. 1930. January 1930. January 9th.
And what were the names of your parents?
Nance and Laura Olson.
What was the first one?
Nance.
Nance? How would you spell that?
N-A-N-C-E.
Okay.
His real name was Nance, but he always went by Nance.
Nanson, so S-O-N then at the end?
S-E-N.
S-E-N at
the end. But he went by Nance his whole lifetime. I never even knew what his real name was until we got a little older. You know? Mm-hmm.
And what was your mother's name?
Laura.
Laura. Uh-huh. And what were the names of your grandparents?
Conrad and Catherine Frick.
And that's F-R-I-C-K?
Mm-hmm.
And the other set of grandparents?
The Olsons? They were Valentine and... Betty, help me out. Huh?
Nellie. And Valentine. The reason I'm asking you how to spell thing is for our transcriber. Mm-hmm. Valentine, is that V-A-L?
V-I-N.
V-A-L-E-N-T-I-N-E?
Right.
Like Valentine?
Yeah, that's
okay.
What it was.
Okay. And did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I had, I got three brothers and one sister.
And what were their names, and how was the birth order?
Gene was the oldest, Dale second, and I was next, and then my sister Darlene, and Larry was the youngest.
And did Gene spell his name G-E-N-E? Okay. And what brought your people to Edwards County? There's a little genealogy for you. When did they come and why?
Well, my grandparents... came from aboard over across the ocean, but I can't remember the date they came, and they settled up south of Burnett about 13 miles, and that's where all of Dad's brothers and sisters were born, right south of Burnett about 13 miles.
All 12 of them.
My dad's dad came over first. He was a fisherman. That's the way he made his living, fishing. And he started fishing. Then finally he brought his wife over. I don't know when that was, how much later it was.
Where did he start fishing? Where did he, when he first came to
the... He fished from Norway. He fished in Norway,
yeah.
And then he come over here and fish.
Oh, where did he fish when he came here?
Washington. West.
Washington State?
Yeah. Yeah, what, out in the ocean someplace there. And he brought his wife. I can't remember how. I think Dad said 2 years later. And they had... In the meantime, he was fishing, and they got his boat got wrecked, and he was out in the ocean 7 days before they finally found him hanging onto a piece of wood from the boat. And then he quit the fishing, and that's when they come south of Burdett, and I guess at that time they just settled on this quarter land, like this grandparents did.
And about what year is that, do you know?
Oh, goodness, I can't tell you that. It was...
like it'd be
1800 something.
Before your older... This is your parents, right? Or grandparents?
Grandparents, okay.
It was before they had children.
Yes.
And your parent, your... Are we talking about your father's parents or mother's at this point?
My father's parents.
Okay, was this before the children were born? Do you know when your father was born? About?
Well, let's see. Daddy, do you remember that?
29th of July, I know that.
Oh,
I 29th of July, 1899. So sometime right before that, probably, they came here. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other side of the family, your mother's side, do you know why they came to this area?
They had a relative that paid their way, another something that was lived in eastern Kansas somewhere.
Yeah,
and they worked for him, you know, they were sort of like, not indentured, but they worked for him until they got their fare paid off. And I don't know how they got up here.
Or how they met, parents met.
No,
I don't know. But I think they all came, well, they came over. Yeah, my mother came over with them when they came over here.
She was five.
Okay. So she was born in...
Right, she was born... I can't tell you whether Germany or Russia, because they always claimed they were German, but we found out later they was Russian.
Well, those borders are flexible.
And the reason they came over, why, on account of there was wars there. They get everything stocked in the house, and here comes the war, and take everything out of the house, and then they'd go back the other way and take their stuff out of their house again. So they just got tired of it. And when they was getting ready to go, one of the brothers, mother's brother, had sore eyes. Well, he couldn't get on the ship with sore eyes. Well, they got into contact with this guy, and he said, I can make your eyes all right so you can get on the boat. So they all got on the boat at the same time. And they had to stay in the bottom of the boat. And mother said it was terrible. And one thing she always remembered, she was 6 years old. She said they buried a little girl on the ship. They put her on a board and raised the board up. And she could remember that when she was 6 years old. But she said it was terrible. There wasn't any pot, just buckets for people to use. And she said it was terrible.
She said her mother said that if she'd had to put up that much longer, she would have lost her mind.
Yeah.
It was so noisy and hot and sweaty and nasty.
So it must have been terrible.
So your mother was German speaking?
Yes.
And then she married a Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
Now did your dad speak Norwegian or?
They never did. But mother used to talk to her folks. Especially when the kids were around, they talk in German, so we couldn't understand what they said.
That's pretty smart.
I remember that. They'd be talking along, and then all at once, we'd come in there, and then they'd start talking German, because it's something we wasn't supposed to hear.
Did you know all your grandparents then?
Oh, yeah. My dad's dad.
Uh-huh.
He got Bright's disease. I forgot to tell you about that. He got Bright's disease from being... in the oceans for seven days.
Yeah, it's from exposure to water a long time.
Huh.
And he died when my dad was 10 years old. And I asked Dad if he was... Oh, yeah, he said, I remember it. Oh, he was 10 years old.
It's called nephritis or something now.
Okay, and I'm not sure we're going to be picking you up all the time, so I'm going to repeat that. It's Bright's disease, and it's from being exposed to salt water for a long time. And it's called maybe...
Or it just says water.
Or water. What'd you call it? Nephritis?
Nephritis?
Nephritis, something like that.
I get itis, I guess, on the N. Infection, which is infection.
Okay. Nephritis.
Something like that.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting both those are two interesting stories there, how they came over.
And Bill's mama said that she was never so scared in her life. They got off the boat in New York. And they evidently didn't come into Ellis Island, because when we went up there, we went out and read the wall, you know, and their names were on there. But anyway, and here she saw a train. She'd never seen a train before in life. It scared her to death.
I bet it would.
Coming down the track. That's how they came out to Kansas.
And they pretty much came right out because they were joining relatives.
Yeah.
Relatives in Ray.
Yeah, that's it.
A town by the name of Ray. That's where this relative was.
Yeah.
And that's where they got together. And I was trying to...
Do you know if they came with a little nest egg, a little bit of money, or were they pretty...
They sold their farm, I mean, what they had in Russia.
They did.
Because that's why they was so desperate for them to get on the ship, because they had no money to... live on. What were they going to do, you know, if they had to stay there? I don't know what port they left from.
I'm wondering, I'm going to pause this for a second.
Yeah, let me see here. I think.
Okay, so you grew up with these older brothers and a sister. What was life like growing up? What chores and what was the household like?
We had a lot of chores to do. We'd get up in the morning. When we was 6 years old, let's say, we'd go out early in the morning and milk cows. The calves, separate milk. You want to hear all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Feed the pigs. I mean, we're helping Dad. Mm-hmm. We always, and we'd come in and we'd always have a healthy breakfast. Eggs and bacon and fried potatoes, and get on a horse, or the bicycle, and ride 2 miles to school. That was Nettleton. Mm-hmm. We'd go to Nettleton. I went to Nettleton for 4 years.
What was that school like?
Betty, you ought to give Joan that picture. You got that picture of that school, that Nettleton school.
But you tell us.
Well, it had a gymnasium and 2 classrooms and an upstairs with a stage where we used to put on little plays when we was little kids.
How about how many people were in your class?
Three.
Mm-hmm.
Three in my class. And the first, second, and third was in one grade, one room, and the fourth, fifth, and sixth, seventh, and eighth was in the other room. And we always set, each class set in a row. And took her dinners to school in a K-Row gallon bucket. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Mother'd punch holes in the lid so it could get air, and that's the way we took her dinners to school.
And did you say you walked or rode a horse, or how did you?
Rode a horse, and we never did walk.
That's a little far to walk.
Well, usually it was a bicycle or a horse. Mostly a horse. We rode an old horse to school. And we'd take the horse, and they had a barn. We'd put the horse in the barn. And the other family, they just lived down here where Hermy Cass used to live. They'd live there. And there was 2 people from there rode a horse. And then one across the road, they rode. And we'd ride to school together on them horses.
Did you race home?
Well, we wasn't supposed to. My brother Gene was in the 8th grade when I was in the 1st grade. And I don't know where he got it, but he got a buggy. And he painted it off red wheels and black body. And I better not tell you what was on the side of it.
Ew.
And he painted on the side of it the striped-ass date. And us three of them, Gene was kind of a rowdy person. I don't know how many days we went to school. Finally, coming home from school, he wanted to see how fast he'd take that corner down there. Down here a mile south. Well, he took it all right. All three of us ended up out in the field. It was the buggy upside down. Never hurt any of us. We just picked the buggy up, got on, and away we went home. But I can remember those, whatever those things are called, that the horse walked into. Man, I was just a little kid, 6 years old. I could see that thing all twisted up.
Did you neglect to tell your parents that story?
Oh, no. They found out. They found out about it. And nobody got hurt. Teacher never said a word about the buggy, but that was what was on the name of it. I don't know how Dad ever let that happen, but he did.
Oh, you know he laughed.
Yeah, he did. He laughed. He thought it was kind of funny.
Oh, do you remember the names of your teachers at all?
My first teacher was, her name was Olson. Her folks lived in Garfield. John Olson was her dad's name. They were Swedes. And he was a blacksmith in Garfield. And remember Agnes Floger? She was one of the teachers there.
I think they were Henshaw or something. Not a something, but...
Henshaw, that was a grade school in Kinsley.
Oh, okay.
Seems like there's one in the middle there, but I can't remember.
Well, how many years did you go to school there?
4 years.
4 years.
And then they consolidated. They got ready. It was getting pretty late in the fall. I mean, for us to start school, and Dad and Glenn Bidelman and Art Taylor was on the school board. They went down and looked at the school, and they got to looking around at the floor, and the floor had settled about this much in the school.
That's about 2 inches.
Yeah, and they figured that they shouldn't take the chance, so they bought a 16-passenger bus, and that's when we started riding the bus to school.
Is that about 1940, or?
Let's see, I was in the fourth grade. I graduated in 49.
Nope, that's not. Fourth grade, so maybe 34.
And most kids started school at 5 then.
Oh, so that makes a difference.
So, if you started school in 37, let's say 38.
You started in 35. You were born in 1930?
Well, one thing about it, though, I went 4 years down there, and when we consolidated to go to Kinsley, the folks didn't think I knew enough, so they made me take fourth grade over.
Okay.
It's closer to your teacher.
I never did forget.
He was because.
I said, that's the best thing you ever did. And, of course, we was the only big bus that went to Kinsley at that time, because this was the bigger school. The rest of the country schools around there was just one-room schools, you know. There were several of them. Oh, I wish I could remember. I guess you wouldn't want to know where all the schools were.
Well, we have a map at the library.
Oh, you do? Okay. Okay.
Were there any feelings about the consolidation? Were the families happy you were going into Kinsley? Or?
Well, the kids wasn't very happy. Oh, it was quite a change, let me tell you. Because at Nettleton, we used to play cowboys and Indians at recess, and all real mean games like that, sword fights, and at school, that wasn't allowed. And that really toned things down.
And then which school did you attend in Kinsley?
Northside.
Northside.
Yeah. I went to Northside School, and what else? There was my teacher in the fourth grade there was Maribel Martin. She lived north of Kinsley about a mile north of Kinsley on that
where Vic Hirsch lived, wasn't it?
Yeah, where Vic Hirsch lived. Do you remember her? That's where she lived. And bless her heart, she took the whole fourth grade one Friday afternoon. And we all lined up and went out there. We had a picnic out there in that little creek. I can remember roasting weenies and everything. And I thought that was real nice.
You walked?
Huh?
You walked?
Yep.
Well,
to a breast.
They used to walk for Memorial Day things at the cemetery.
I know it.
Well, the change that I see in that part of it, kids walk to school. If they lived in town, they walked to school, or they rode bicycles. I can remember at the high school building, there was two racks and it was full of bicycles. Mm-hmm. Everybody rode bicycles to school, and now you never see anything on the automobile.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good, but that's the way it is.
Well, let's go back to Nettleton a little bit. When you were going to school there, how much of a community was there? Were there stores, or?
When I went to Nettleton, the stores was all gone. All there was an elevator, and that was across the highway. There was a barn, a horse barn, and they had a two-car garage. The teachers never did use the garage because it was a little ways from the school. They didn't want to walk, I guess, to the schoolhouse. They always parked their cars right there by the steps in the schoolhouse.
There were two teachers all the time?
Two teachers.
And what would be the total number of students about?
Well, I think we've got a picture. Shows, I think, 35. Around 35.
That's quite a few kids.
Well, there was quite a few people lived around mm-hmm. here at that time. Mm-hmm. And, see, there was, well, I could point out the houses that were there then, not now. That's all over the country, though. All mm-hmm. these homesteads are gone. Mm-hmm. Poor families have been raised, gone, and the homestead is gone.
And then they're farming over it.
I can remember years ago I talked to the banker about all this that happened, and he said, you don't know how much we miss little farmers coming into the bank. Mm-hmm. We really miss that.
I bet. Okay. Now let's go back then, because I interrupted you. You got up in the morning and you did your chores, came in and had this big breakfast, we'll call it. And then you went to school. And what else was life like growing up in your household?
Well, it was just like any kid, I guess. We just come home after school and we had chores to do again.
Were you able to participate in sports in school, or did you come home and do chores?
Do chores. And then on Saturdays, the chicken house had to be cleaned out every Saturday.
Got to play?
Oh, I got to play. Sure I did. I never worked all the time. I got to play. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I had my little tractors and stuff when I was a little kid. Right down south here. I just about to show you the spot.
And see, you said something in it. You jogged something I was going to ask. What was Christmas like in your house then?
Well, I can remember, see, there was an archway here.
Okay, yeah, right.
There was an archway here. And Mother and Dad, they always had ropes from one corner to the other on both these rooms with icicles hanging on them with a big jingle bell hanging in the middle.
The and silver the, metallic icicles or those?
Just,
yeah, those little, like tinfoil.
Tinfoil,
yeah, like that. Yeah, they're sort of like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was every Christmas. I can remember that.
And you have a tree, too?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We always had a Christmas tree. We always had Christmas here.
Even in the during the Depression?
And
the
right. We never got much. We always had a sock, and we had a few peanuts in it, and an apple, and an orange, and some of this curlicue candy.
Mm-hmm. Christmas ribbon.
Yeah. That's what we had. And the thing about it, we all seemed satisfied and happy because we didn't know any better. And at that time, we didn't know our parents were poor. now kids know if their parents got much money or not, you know. But then we had our bellies full, so we were happy.
What was Christmas dinner?
We always had turkey, usually, or they'd go out and butcher a couple of hens. Yeah, and another thing, they used to butcher. And there was nothing like fresh meat, because we didn't have fresh meat to eat, right? And after so long a time, of course, they had to can the meat to keep, you know. And they canned meat, and the basement down there, there's a big cupboard, it was always full of quart jars of meat. And of course, we raised a garden in the summertime, and my mother canned, and they were all full. So we didn't go hungry. But one time, we didn't have meat. And I don't know, we kind of questioned. We never said too much about it. After we grew up, I asked Dad, I said, how come we always had so much duck and pheasant? He said, well, he said, we didn't have any meat. And you kids needed meat, so I'd go out and shoot ducks off the ponds and shoot pheasants, and that's what we ate. Cottontail, young jackrabbits. We never did eat an old tough one. They'd always get the little ones. But at that time, it wasn't no big deal to go out and shoot a rabbit. You'd go out here a quarter of a mile or so, or right around the house and get cottontails and jackrabbits, you know. Now you don't see that much anymore.
Tell them what the best treat in the world was when you got home from school.
You were
starving.
Oh, the best treat in the world, when we came home from school, Mother would make big loaves of round bread. She'd always make her bread. And we'd come home, and we'd always slice the outside off. We wanted the crust.
Oh.
And we'd put thick cream and sugar on it. Because
mm-hmm.
we'd separate the milk when we had the cream. And that was wonderful to come home. That was
warm,
what our treat was when we came home from school.
At Christmas, did you have any recipes from the old country? Were there cookies or desserts or?
Well, my mother. The only thing I can think of is that baked chicken, a special thing that baked chicken. I really love it. She fixes it once in a while. She don't like it, but I do. But she fixes it for me. It came from the old country. Nobody that I know of ever has baked chicken like this either.
It seems to me that a lot of their cooking, from what Bill said about his grandma, she always had dumplings.
Dumplings.
Dumplings cooking when they go to her house, you know. Mm-hmm. And that things were just, they were raw. You know.
But this dumpling soup that my grandma made, I wish I could remember what it was and should have. She always had it on an old pot-bellied stove.
Cook stove.
Heating stove. Mm-hmm. But I can always remember we'd go in there and you'd smell it. It was always on the stove. And she'd always say, she was jerk. She said, Billy, you want some soup? And I was, yes, I do. And she'd give me a big bowl of soup.
Is there anything, you were pretty young, but is there anything you remember about the Depression and the Dirty 30s? And
the only thing I can remember is one afternoon, we seen this big black cloud coming in, and it wasn't long till you couldn't see. Well, the folks knew what was coming, so they had sheets on all the windows, because, you know, the houses weren't like they are now. Over the windows to keep the dirt from coming in, and she'd always on the table, she'd always have a sheet on the table. When the food was on the table, when we get ready to eat, she'd take the sheet off and we'd sit down and eat. And other than that, I can't remember much, because I can remember it just got black and they had to light the coal all lamps and stuff to see.
Okay, so now we're going to maybe move up a little bit into World War II. Do you remember Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I do.
What you were doing then?
Yes, I do. I can remember Pearl Harbor. I can remember when it was over.
Did you hear it on the radio, or did you have a radio?
We were splitting up hay over north of Kinsley, about a mile. Some alfalfa. And all at once, the sirens went off. And I don't know, somebody went by, said, "The war is over. The war is over."
That's getting it over at that
time. It was over. But all I can remember, it was terrible when the Pearl Harbor thing hit. And I can remember people talking about the United States was sleeping. They wasn't attending to business. That's the only thing I can remember people saying. They wasn't attending to business, or it wouldn't happen.
Did World War II affect your family? Did you have relatives who served? Or?
Well, my brother Gene was in the Air Force, and he was an Air Force mechanic, in other words, and he was in California, and he became sick, and he came home, and it ended up being cancer, I guess, and he died at 21.
But he was in hospital in Chicago.
Yeah, he was in
California
hospital in
Chicago.
He was in Chicago, the Veterans Hospital of Chicago, in Wichita, and then back home. Finally, they took him to Wichita. He died in Wichita.
Do you remember, like, the rationing or any other ways that the war
affected?
Yes, affected?
The rationing. The only ones who could get tires were the farmers, but they had to go in and get some kind of certificate. And they could get tires for their implements at that time, tractor tires and so forth. And trucks and cars, but that's the only, not the only thing I can remember, that tires were really hard to get. And I can remember the speed limit at one time was 35 miles an hour on the highways to conserve tires. And most everybody drove 35 too, because they knew if the tires went out, they couldn't get a tire.
Anything else about that time period you'd like to mention?
Well, I can remember the folks. We had an old radio that wouldn't work half the time, but they'd try to listen to the news, see what was going on, and they, of course, they'd always get the paper, you know, to read about it.
Did you go into the movies and see the newsreels?
No. No, that was the radio. But, oh, we never got to go to town.
So you didn't go to town?
Every week or 2 weeks. It was a big thing when we got to go to town on Saturday afternoon.
When you went to town, did you go to Kinsley?
Kinsley.
You didn't go to Garfield or Arnold?
No, Kinsley. And a lot of times, whenever you go in, the folks always had cream to take in, mm-hmm. or eggs to take in to sell. They'd go buy the groceries, and they'd always have money left after bought the groceries. And there was a grocery store, it was West, I think it was called. And I remember, they'd go in there and buy groceries, and he had a container on here about so big with suckers in it. And when the folks would buy groceries, then he'd reach in with his hand and throw a handful of suckers in the grocery sack. I can remember that real plain. And I mean, it was a handful, because full when he threw it in there. Nothing was said. They just, that was everybody, didn't say, did everybody put a handful of suckers in the grocery sack for the kids.
And the whole family went to town when you went? Was it an outing, or did some stay home?
Some, I don't remember all of us going at once. Because it was a little bit late, the chores. The kids stayed home, they'd start chores. I can remember one time the folks went to town, they came home from school, and we went out, we milked all the cows, got all the chores, and come home. Or about that time the folks came home. And of course we were so happy, chores are done. Well, great. Well, later on we heard He said, we did this on purpose. We wanted to see if you'd do it. I can remember him saying that. He did the chores. When he came home, the chores were all done. He was delighted that we got it done.
But you didn't get to go to the movies when you went to town.
Yeah, what?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. And the movie, I think, cost a nickel or a dime at that time. You know, when Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and all them. Oh, yeah, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. They used to line up for blocks. You wouldn't believe that. They used to line up a block each way to get to the theater on Saturday night. Mm. And when television came, that ended all that. I don't know, I think television was the ruination of everything. The kids, you know, they come home, they don't have nothing to do, so they sit there and watch TV and eat snacks, you know. And that's the one thing, I guess, we was lucky. We had something to do. We had chores to have the GB done. We didn't have that luxury, I guess you'd call it. I don't know. And after the chores were done, if there's any time, why, we do our playing. Work always came first. I remember one time, also, in the middle of summer, it was hot, and I was to water the chickens at noon. So the chickens would be out of water. Well, I got busy playing, and Dad come home, chickens were out of water. And he said, you didn't water chicken. I said, well, I forgot. And I didn't forget. I just thought he wouldn't say anything, but he wasn't too happy.
Did you get a weapon? Huh?
Yeah, when I got one from him, I got it.
Good. You needed one.
I can remember when we grew up, why we talk about those days, you know. And we was always tickled at whips. That's what we needed. We needed a whip. But there was always love in the family. Whenever something happened, after the whip was over, it was done. We're happy then. But the whipping came first. I can remember, I shouldn't tell you this, but I will.
It's going to be on the tape, so is it okay?
I like chicken.
Okay.
So I played like I was a chicken. And I went down, and in the evening, the chickens want to go to roost. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd go down there and sit on the chicken roost, mm-hmm. act like a chicken. Well, the chickens were afraid of it, so there'd be a whole area on the roost that there wasn't any chicken. Dad come down, saw me, and he said, told me to get out of there. Don't ever do that again. Well, that didn't satisfy me. I went and did it again. And brother, I got a licking that I've never forgot in all my life. I swore it was a tube before. But Dad said he just ripped off a slat on an orange crate. You know what an orange crate is? We wore overalls, and he picked me up by my suspenders, and he flogged me. That's the worst whipping he ever gave. But I learned something. And after we grew up, I said, thanks, Dad, for doing that. I needed it. Today, I think that's partly what's wrong with the generation growing up. A whipping never hurt any kid, as long as there's love in the family. You don't want to forget that. And another time, Dad hired a couple of guys. I can remember that. We was just kids. I think I was 14. And he had a couple of guys he hired to drive tractors while we was harvesting. Well, it never worked out too good. We'd have trouble with the old combine. I was running the combine, and this guy was on the tractor, and I'd work to try to get the combine to go on, and the guy just sat on the tractor. Finally, Dad come up with the other old combine and stopped and said, where's so-and-so? I don't remember his name. And we sat up there on the tractor. And of course, both these guys was together. And Dad said, "Well, that's it. You're fired. You're with the house." And he was mad. And the guy wanted to leave. For this. After all the big to do, the blowing off and getting mad, the dinner time, we sat down and we eat a peaceful dinner. Everybody laughed. Right here this time. Anytime something happened, when it was over, it was over.
Now, how big was the farm then? Well, how much were you farming?
Oh, what's that?
About.
Farm wasn't too big back then. I can't remember for sure. I don't know. A section or something. I don't know. Grass and everything. I don't remember.
And you grew wheat and hay, alfalfa. What?
Wheat and he grew a lot of hay. Three cows and alfalfa, oats and barley, and all the oats and barley was always bound with a binder and shocked and thrashed with an old thrasher machine.
Here? You did all that here?
Yes. See, everybody did this. They're all around this vicinity. Shocked oats and barley. And there was a guy by the name of Joe Schmidt, I think was his name. He had the thrash machine, and he'd bring it around, and to each farmer's place, we'd thrash. And I was pretty small. I got in on all of it, and my job was running a little tractor and taking two trailers out in the field, and they called them spike pitchers. They put load these two racks up, and I'd bring them up to the thrash machine and unhook them, and then hook on the two racks and take them back out. And that was my job. And my brother...
About how old were you?
Oh, 8, 10, something like that. Just awful small. And my brother, he was probably about 15. And we had an old truck, and he'd back up to the thrash machine, and the grain would come in the truck, and he'd haul it up, and he'd scoop at the grainer. Him and Dad scoop at the grainer. There was other people helped pitch it in the thrash machine. But I can remember, and this thrash, you know, bundles were tied with twine.
Mm-hmm.
And this thrash machine... Just before it went into the cylinder to thresh, it had some things with knives on it that run like this. And you'd always throw the bundle in so it'd go this way, not this. That way that thing would cut that twine before it hit the cylinder, so it thresh good. And
then did you take the barley and oats, was it? Did you then take it and sell it?
No.
Oh, that was...
Put it in the grain.
That was for your use.
That was your pig and hog and cow feed. Mm-hmm. You'd take that. He'd grind that. Because the cows, see, he had beef cows and milk cows both. And he'd feed that to his beef cow, his calves when he weaned them and stuff like that. And his bucket calves, he'd always feed oats, whole oats to his bucket calves. A bucket calf would never look like a, they was always kind of pot bellied. You don't want to feed them too much milk. I mean, they'd eat an enormous bunch of milk if you give it to them. And, getting these calves to learn how to drink out of a bucket. See, you got them, and all they know is sucking on a cow. Well, you get them calves and stick that bucket down there, and then you take this finger and you stick it in their mouth and stick their nose down in this bucket, and they start sucking on your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And after, I can't remember, Betty did the same thing, I imagine, four or five times. Pretty soon, you just slowly take your finger out. And then you get it right out of the mouth. No, thanks.
I guess we didn't talk about that. Now, was your sister's chores different than yours? Did she work in the field, or was she more of a
home? No, my sister didn't do
that. She was in the house.
She did. She did a little something in the house. That's about it.
Oh, now it took something to feed you guys.
Yeah, she helped mom in the house. But this garden thing, I forgot to tell you about that. We raised an enormous garden and potatoes. And, of course, the folks would always get, they'd get chickens. I don't know what time of the year it was, but they'd start growing up. And we'd get about 6 weeks old, we'd have chickens for dinner. And us boys would have to go out and butcher 6 or 8 chickens when they was little. Besides that, before we went to field. And also, we went out and hoed the garden before we went to field. Or dug potatoes and brought them up before we went to field. The milk and the butter and the eggs was down at the windmill. They had several barrels set up, and they put the milk in there just with, on top of bricks so the water couldn't get over the lid, and their butter. And it's time to eat, while us kids' job, or one of us, run down to get the milk and the butter out of the... God, where you was born and raised, they had one of those houses, cement. Did you know what I'm talking about? They had one. Now, we never had one. They just had some barrels down here, but you had a house up there.
And the water ran through to keep it...
Right. And then it ran through, but it wasn't wasted. It ran on the garden. Mm-hmm. And the garden was always the onions, radishes, and carrots. The water never stopped running on. Night. All night, the water would be running. That would make the carrots and the radishes sweet.
And it'll make them sweet. Now, is your soil out here real sandy, or is it good?
It's pretty black soil.
Sweet, okay.
And also to make it sweet, the chicken house would get all the manure to be put on the garden in the wintertime on the garden, and then plowed onions in the spring of the year. I can remember, that's what makes them onions sweet and carrots.
Did you, your vegetables, did you have like a root cellar or something, or was it all canned? Okay.
The potatoes, that was what they didn't think. We had a big water storage tank in the basement years ago. We always had running water in the house, but not any toilet or anything like that, just running water. And there was a big tank set there with a couple of pillars that it was sitting on, and the folks would make things to lay these potatoes in. But, I mean, we just couldn't eat them fast enough. A lot of them had spoiled. That was about the best place. And then they had an old cave down here where the house used to sit that used to store potatoes in, too, down under the ground, you know. But I forget it, but they didn't last too awful long.
So you always had water in the house, but how about when did you get electricity?
In 1940, I really can't honestly tell.
Before or after the war, that might be.
Oh, is that after war, I think. You have any idea, Betty? I can remember when they cut it out and took a little wooden thing with a point on it. Not that long, and drove in the ground where the posts were going. Posts were going in the yard. And I also remember when they come out and brought the wires in and everything. And my heavens, when they wired the house and the barn and everything, they had a generator. And they turned it on. My gracious, was it wonderful! What was bad? They shut it off and left. And at that time, everybody got, they couldn't stand it, so they all got holidays had their own little...
It took two or three years before REA got...
Yeah, it took several years for them.
They got it going.
And you call a holidayer, is that a generator? What? You said everybody couldn't wait and they got a what?
Alternator.
Alternator.
Generator,
sure.
Alternator,
okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
It's about the same thing.
Okay, I know. Okay.
Most everybody I know got one. And this...
If they were doing it maybe during the war years, that may be what took it so long, too.
Could be.
Because I know, out by me, it stopped it. They didn't get it till after the war because they needed the copper for the war.
Yeah.
I remember it was a coal plant. And now, how this worked, I don't know, but you went in and you turn on the light switch and it starts the coal plant. And at night you shut off the switch and it would shut off. But ours didn't shut off, so every night, Dad never could figure out what was wrong with it. So every night, why he'd always have to go out and shut off the coal plant because it wouldn't shut off but it turned on in the morning.
Hmm. Okay, and then how about telephone? When did you get that?
Oh, we've always had telephones, box telephones on the wall.
Yeah.
And one thing I can remember about old box telephones, the phone would ring and a few people always like to listen to other people's conversations. And another thing I can remember when I was a kid, people lived down here by the name of George Hahn. They about had a whole bunch of kids. Now, they were older than we are, but they all played musical instruments. And I can remember once in a while they'd give one big long ring. Everybody'd pick up the phone and they'd get in front of the phone and all up and play, and you'd sit there listening to them.
That's a good story. I've never heard that one.
I couldn't remember that. There was banjo, mandolin, guitar, all sorts of things he played. Now, everyone played a musical instrument. But, and then also these people would take old mob tees and make strip downs out of them. They call them strip downs. They'd strip everything off and all those motors, just the motor and part of the frame of the steering wheel. And boy, they'd come up the road here and slide this corner out here. I can remember Dad talking. Man, they're going to slide all the sand off the road.
So this was the Olson place, right? Before you. And then you got married, and then did you live here, or?
We lived about 9 miles south of Rivette for 9 months.
Oh, okay.
And then I was drafted in the service for 2 years. And when it was time for me to get out, Dad thought, I guess we need a place to live, so they moved out and moved along and retired.
He was tired, too.
Yeah. So he retired when he got out of the
service? He was tired. He was doing it all himself. And he was getting tired. And he, of course, he retired at 52, I think. And, that was quite a big jump. Getting out of Ireland and moving into this house and all this land for to do myself, you know. And I'll never forget my uncle owned it. At that time, my uncle owned it. And he told Dad, he said, well, as long as you look after it, why, he can live there. And that always hurt me because I was born a farmer. I didn't want to. And that's all I'm talking. Nothing that Lassie's ever said.
You kept looking after it, huh?
That's right, I kept looking after it.
Did your father work after he left here? Or get a little part-time job?
He did painting for nothing. He liked to paint. The people always liked to have him paint. So he'd go paint their house or something to do.
And then they'd bring their broken tools, the handles broke out of the rakes, nose, and so on. And he'd fix those, and he'd just putter around.
Yeah, he'd putter around these shops.
I always said he must have 25 gallons of red paint, because everything you put a new handle in came home with a bright red painted handle.
So you don't lose it.
So how did you meet Betty?
Well, I knew her all my life. I hauled her on the school bus when I drove the school bus.
When did you start driving the school bus?
I was a junior in high school. I drove it when I was a junior and senior in high school.
Now this is the school bus, the Nettleton school bus?
No, well, there was more than Nettleton going on. I drove a pretty good sized bus at that time.
You were a junior in high school?
Yeah. And I was a junior. In fact, you can get a chauffeur's license to see. After I graduated, that ended that. No more kids drove a school bus.
No wrecks, no problems, no getting stuck.
I had trouble with one guy. Well, he's probably known Ray Moore.
Yeah.
And he'd tell that damn kid's gonna kill a bunch of kids. But Bill never killed anybody. Because I felt like I had a responsibility, and I never acted like a jughead driving a school bus. The only thing driving the school bus, what bothered me, is when we'd go to a football game, that was my bus. I said, what if somebody else, it's your bus, you're going to drive. And I didn't like that, because most kids that hauled was my age. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a responsibility I didn't like. Yeah. I think we went to Stafford and St. John and Greensburg. I just never did care.
So you were high school sweethearts then, or
no?
No, mm-hmm. We never was sweethearts till we got out of school.
He flirted outrageous.
I just flirted with her on the bus. That big mirror up there, and I'm driving the bus, and I wink at her. It's quite a story.
Yeah, it is.
And then I worked at the theater after I got out of school. I wanted to learn how to run them projectors. Well, I learned how to run the projectors, but the guy up there couldn't stand anymore. So I told, what was his name?
Stare.
I said, I can't stand him. And he knew what I was talking about. I said, well, hey, you just sell tickets or something like that now. I never asked him for a job. I just went in and said, I want to learn. Mm-hmm. So I sold tickets, and one Saturday, I guess, Betty came in, and there was, I don't know, there wasn't too many people in the show or something. I don't know. She came in, and I asked Houston, I said, hey, mind if I just take off? I want to go down and set beside somebody down here. Well, I guess that's the way it started.
It must have been Edith Marie.
That was you. But that was quite an experience for learning the projectors. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what they got now, whether it's the same thing or not.
Probably not too different.
It's about the same. Huh? It's about the same, I think.
It is?
It's an old projector.
I forget. There was two things you had to get just right, mm-hmm. get them together to get them to fire, and also something else about running the theater I learned up there. All the films that came in, we had to go through them all. We had a thing, and we'd take our fingers, and we'd run all those films through, so if there's any breaks in them, we'd stop, clip them, and glue them back together, so we wouldn't have a film break at the show. That's something else. But I didn't know they did that, but we did it. Every time the film come in, we run all the films through. I mean, that was quite an experience, because I was just curious to see what it was all like. And after the first show was on, I'd go down to the basement. We always kept the advertisement down in the basement of the theater. And I'd go down there and get the advertisement ready for the next, whatever the next day show was, like a Saturday night. It'd be Sunday's show, I put that outside in the
placard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what year did you graduate from high school?
49.
49, and you were a little younger, right? Mm-hmm. So you were graduating in...
I graduated.
Where's the basement in the theater?
Under the stage.
Under the stage.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know, but that's where we kept all the advertising.
Okay.
You'd have to go out and get that whole place. But that was a big deal, running through all these films.
Yeah, that would take a while, too.
But this guy that was up there taught me how to do that. And he was on a crank. You just start that film through it. and you see them in a track, and you stop and back up and kept right there, and they had a special splicer. You splice them back together and start rolling again. Once in a while, there'd be a lot of them. Because what he told me, he said, some of them don't do that. They just run the show. It's a break. It breaks. If some of the time it'd go on through, then they would broke. One side usually went deep. You can tell it broke on one side.
So you started out as a volunteer, but you ended up being paid, or did you just always
talk? Yeah. Volunteer. Yeah, he'd like for me to be there.
Sure.
I guess.
So you graduated, and you were back here farming and courting her then, maybe?
Yeah.
Or not yet, not till you graduated.
Not till I graduated.
Yeah, but what about her? Were you a senior or not?
When you started dating?
Yeah, I was a senior.
And then?
At the end of the year, your school year.
And then, because you got married that summer after you graduated?
Yeah.
And so somewhere in there you got engaged or not?
Yeah,
no,
couple of.
We only went together 3 months.
Okay.
Couple of.
He had to get his
dumb kids. That's what we were. Couple of dumb kids went together 2-3 months and got married.
Well, that seems to have worked, though.
Yeah, we've been married a long time.
How many years? Let's see. 61. For this year.
Well, we've heard several. Hell, that will never last very long.
And there's times we didn't think it would either.
One thing about marriage, you got to give and take. You can't just have it all your way.
Okay, now she said something that you had to get your parents' permission to get married. So how did this elopement work and things? Did you have permission and then you eloped? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we had to get her blood test, too. I don't know where we got that set at.
Oh, to get the license. Yeah.
Yeah, the license.
No, because you went to New Mexico because you had to wait 3 days in Kansas till the blood test come back. We just couldn't wait. Our life was so busy.
Kids can't wait now either, but they don't get married. So.
We used to call it shack up.
Mm-hmm. Well, why did you choose Raton? That's quite a ways.
It was closest.
To get out.
I think Colorado had a waiting period too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the right thing.
But your parents knew you were eloping or not?
No, her folks did.
We stopped in Dodge City. We didn't get done. Well, it's our friends of ours' fault. They kept saying, if you were such cowards, you'd elope. Won't you just elope? Well, we finally did. Anyway, we stopped in Dodge to eat some supper. And I kept watching. I knew my father was going to come storming in the door any minute and jerk me out of there. But
it
hurt my parents.
Yeah, I hurt her parents. He went to speak to us for what, 6 weeks or 2 months or something?
I couldn't all die.
You wanted your whipping and have it over with.
Yes. Me too.
And it but like I said.
And it didn't help that when we sent telegrams from Raton. Mm-hmm. It didn't help when my father called Bill's folks and said, did you get a telegram, see what these kids have done? And his mother just laughs at it. That's the first you knew about it?
That's the wrong thing. Wrong thing.
But she loved it.
Well,
but anyway,
the good Lord been good to us. They give us 4 good kids.
16 grandchildren,
our own home.
10 or 11 great
grandchildren.
Yeah.
Okay, why did you start raising sheep? Or when, I guess, or why?
Well, I can tell you why. I did it so the kids had something to do.
So this is after you've had children.
The kids got to take care of cattle.
We couldn't.
And it made. We started out with 20 head. We sold the first, and then we got 150 or something. And at that time, I had 150 ewes, and I bought 100 head of cattle. I worked all winter on the cattle, and I had 150 ewes, lambed them out, and the sheep made me more money than the cattle, so I said, we're going in the sheep business.
Well, the cattle broke even.
Yeah, we broke even on the cattle. We never lost any money, but worked all winter for nothing.
So that's in the 60s or the early
50s.
Late 50s.
See, we was in the sheep business for 38 years. Took us that long to find out we didn't like them. But one thing about it, like, because the kids could help. Mm-hmm. And Mitchell did a lot. The girls go out and help. See, the when they lamb, we always put them. We had, 60 little stalls, four and four stalls. When they lamb, they'd go right in this stall. And they had to be watered. Mm-hmm. They had to be fed twice a day. Lambs were coming all the time. And what was it, one year we had 900 or something?
Oh.
And my gracious. That's a lot of life.
A lot of work.
That's the only thing I had against sheep is the coyotes. If we wouldn't have had to fight the coyotes, we might have still had sheep. But so help me, you had to watch them like a hawk all the time. Otherwise, we really kind of liked them. And of course, the wool got so it wasn't worth nothing. They bought wool from overseas. There was even better wool, or long, they called it long staple wool. We didn't have, they wanted wool like this, and overseas they could get long staple. And our wool market kind of went to bad. In fact, early when it was in the sheep market, we'd shear 10, 12 pounds off of you, and it'd get $1.27 a pound for it. So you can imagine what a difference that'd make when the wool market went down. That's a pretty good deal when you sell wool. It pays for all the feed and everything, just the wool.
We've always said that the reason sheep raisers make money, they're in time to go anywhere and spend it. So
and we did.
I've forgotten this till now. Bill would tell you if you do that. Tell them about the kids walking the sheep down the pasture where they went to school.
Well, kids walk sheep half a mile south down our pasture before we went to school, our kids. Then they come back and then they get on the bus and go to school. Betty, when we was lambing heavy, now the kids were going to school, she'd come out in the evening at 10 o'clock and she'd take care of the sheep until, about 4 o'clock the next morning, 5, and then I'd take over. And I'd be with them. I'd feed them and lamb them and everything until the next day, till the next evening at 10 o'clock, and she'd come out. So she knew as much about lambing sheep as I did.
Now, did you?
Couldn't have did it without her.
Mm-hmm. Did you use dogs too? Did you have to help her?
No.
We only have stupid dogs.
I used a motorcycle to run the coyotes. Turn down here and do that. In fact, you sat here and watched the sheep. Uh-oh, there's a coyote. I'll bet you out there, you're right out there, there'll be a coyote starting to molest the sheep. Mm-hmm. So you run the coyote away.
Yeah.
Come home, park.
Kind of how the goats would help protect them.
Oh,
goat,
yeah.
Deal.
They said goats keep coyotes away. So I went up to, I think it was Jet Moore or someplace, and this guy had goats. So they was up, oh, it's so cute. Instead of one, I got five. Well, I brought them home. Instead of the goats staying with the sheep, the goats would be down this end of the pasture, and the sheep would be up this end of the pasture. And then they got so, instead of jumping the fence, they just crawl up on it and just mash it to the ground and get out.
I bet the goats didn't last long.
Oh, they lasted a little while. And they eat the slats of the snow face. See, we put the snow face up, keep the coyotes out at night. Mm-hmm. And the goats just sit there and they just start on a slat and just pull that sucker out and eat it all. And these yellow flowers, Snickers, grow a little
bull
nettle. Goats would eat them like honey. They'd put them in their mouth and they'd roll them in their lips and pretty soon they'd swallow them and grab it up. And we just heard today, from Janet Strong. She you should read about it. If you want to take care of your pasture, just get a bunch of goats, and they'll eat everything. All those weeds, they like weeds, and they leave the grass, and you just use goats. That's the best thing you can do.
And you can sell goats to them, too.
Yeah. We've eaten goats, and it's good, but they're eating much better on a goat.
Well, the Hispanic population likes goats. Yeah. So it's
Have you eaten goats?
Uh-huh.
It's good. It's good.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah. It's good, but
he didn't either. To his knowledge, or he wouldn't have ate it.
What'd you say?
I said if you'd have known about it, you wouldn't have ate it.
Probably not.
Well, it's cats.
Yeah. I was in Mexico, and that's right.
I ate turtle once too, and I didn't know it. I drank goat's milk once, and I didn't know it.
You probably knew that if you drank it, didn't you?
No.
I didn't know it. Didn't know it.
He got puked 2 days later when I told him what he had done. That was early too.
Okay, now, well, your kids are doing this, and I'm going to go back here in a minute, but were they in 4-H?
No.
Nope, this is just...
No, they're never in 4-H. I don't know why, but I just didn't feel like I had time to do that. That takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. With all that lambing that was going on, they did not have time.
I was thinking about showing, lambs and things.
Now, Mitchell's boys showed lambs 1 year. They had a couple beautiful lambs, but they hardly showed. They weren't blackface. They have to be Suffolk in order.
Suffolk.
You know what they are? The black face. That's the one. And these weren't black face.
Suffolks were winning that year, I guess. Oh, well.
But people, I don't know, they are attractive sheep. But these sheep the boys raised, they were real good sheep. I've been a sheep long enough, I knew. And I was really discouraged. And so was Mitchell. Because he kind of knew. He was discouraged, too, because they worked awful hard on them.
Okay, well, let's go back here. We've got you eloping and coming back, and you're getting drafted in 9 months. And then where did you live when he went up?
At home with my parents.
Okay.
Over there on Old 183.
Okay, and...
Where on Old 183? Where Kingrys live.
That's where she was born and raised.
Charles? Norma? No, Norma. Norma. Oh, sure. I know. Woodson. I knew that.
And you were probably pregnant, did this say?
Yes.
And expecting and had the baby while we were you gone?
No. My stepmother and I drove down to South Carolina and I found an apartment. And she came back on the train, didn't she? Bill wasn't a really smart thing to do. Bill was still in basic training, so he had about an hour or two free in the evening, and that was it. And didn't always get a pass because somebody goof up, and then everybody's restricted. And then when Debbie was due in August, she was due in July, my mother came down on the train and stayed 10 days because when we had Debbie. It took me a long time.
No.
I just didn't have her when that was due, And she stayed then probably a week after Debbie was born, and she came back on the train again.
And so then you were together. Okay, and you, so this was basic training and shortly thereafter, and you were in, let me see, what do we have here? South Carolina, Fort Jackson, and you stayed there your whole hitch, and what was your job? What were you doing?
Tell how they...
I signed up for automotive mechanic, and they sent me to cook school.
Good, I couldn't cook in this company.
Pencil and paper, I couldn't ever figure that. But I went to cook school. It was, oh man, you talk about tough. It was tough. I was assigned a battery after I got out of cook school, and I stayed at the same place all the time. And I ended up being assistant mess sergeant. But what was the bad part about that was doing all the ratings, the kids overseas, And we'd have to wear these armbands, Sergeant First Class, see, because that's the job I was doing. And I always, and you had to wear it. The job I was doing, I had to wear that armband. But I realized the kids that went over there, why, they deserved it, so I went ahead and did my job. And I'm so proud of my mess hall. We had the honorary mess of the whole camp. And when any generals that ever come to the fort, where they want to eat, B Battery, 28th Field Artillery, come time for inspection, they would never inspect their mess hall because they just knew he was playing.
That's why they kept you there for two years.
That's right. Something was mentioned. He said, you need a few good people, few good men in the United States. And that's the only reason I got to stay. Because I was real strict. I run a good mess hall. The mess hall, the floor, it was kind of really against, if maybe the wheels found out about it, they wouldn't like it. But we talked to KPs in to going over the PX and getting the Clorox and powder soap and stuff. I said, it'll save you a lot of work. And when they got done with that floor at night, it was as white as that glass. And I can remember we had an inspection one day. And of course, they come in, just looked at ours, and explained, they went next door, and I'll never forget a buddy of mine. I still know him. He lives in Iowa. We stood there at the door, and I'd never seen so guys get chewed up so bad in my life. And their floor was, it was the blackest of the nation's face. And I heard them say, how's come their mess hall is white and yours is black? And just, I mean, I can get bad at it. It can be cleaned if they get out on their hands and knees with brushes. Brushes and GI the floor, you know. But the trouble of it, we cooked on cook stoves. Mm-hmm. Number five ray or three ranges or whatever they call it, great big, there was three of them. And you get that floor all nice and white, and then you want to be real careful with the coal so you wouldn't drop any coal or anything. You want to hit that cement that's flatter, and if you walked on it, it'd make a black mark. But our pots and pans, of course, we were real strict about that. If it was greasy when they washed it, it was washed again. Whenever you wash a pot and pan, if your fingers don't squeak when they go over, if they don't squeak, it's dirt. Of course, some of those guys just couldn't get that through their head. Well, I'd have to do it over again. Or some of them have to stay all night to get it done right.
And so your shift was... did you have to work all three meals or two? Or
I cooked for a while. Mm-hmm. And we was on 24 hours and on 24 hours. We'd go to work at noon and get off at noon. And then, like I said, we'd be off till the following noon. And, of course, cooking and all that food, you always smelt like food. And South Carolina is very humid and wet. Go home, take a bath, and couldn't get dry. But she'd always have to take clothes to the laundromat to get them dry, because they wouldn't dry on the clothesline. We had a clothesline out the back of the place. They wouldn't get dry. And you never felt dry. It was, I tell you, it was quite a place. But it didn't seem like they had storms like they do now and then. We never had any storms like that. The coldest I can ever remember gotten, and that's about 20 degrees. And one time we came on a furlough, and when we went back, oh my heavens, the wind blew 40 miles an hour down here, and it blew over trees. And we said, well, it blows 40 miles an hour for days out there in Kansas. They couldn't believe that.
And you were renting a little house or apartment?
Apartment.
And you were raising the baby and got to see him every other day then, it sounds like. And
at night she'd drive the car out and we'd visit for a while. Of course, I couldn't get off the base till I don't know how long it was before I'd get off base. Then finally, after I got out of basic training, I got a pass. They give you a pass on your windshield or your top. And the MPs just wave you through if you had a pass.
And for I assume you had friends and stuff, and for entertainment and what did you do as a young couple?
We cheated at playing Canasta. Bill and her husband.
And we went to drive-in movies. You know, went outside drive-in movies. I have to tell you this story. Little Debbie, she was a little tot. Go to the movie, first thing is, Mama, I got to go to the bathroom. So we got tired of that. So we just bring the pot along and some popcorn, water. That way we wouldn't have to get out of the car and say, give you the pot.
She'd rather go near us often, neither.
Well, did you cook after you got married and came home? Did you cook? You learned how to cook? Did you take over the cooking?
Well, I cook well breakfast every morning.
I don't have to worry about him going hungry if I'm gone.
And when I get down to the kitchen, it's like it is right now. It's cleaned up. I clean the kitchen up. It's clean when I leave.
Now, does she clean the kitchen when she's done?
Yes, she does.
Oh, yes, I have to leave that nasty.
I've heard somebody stories about, oh, man, he cooked, and all the stuff was all set all around. And
About 2 years ago, I woke up and I heard Bill in the kitchen. I'm not going to get up. I think he's cooking his own breakfast. So I just stayed in bed until it was too late for him to quit. And he said, and that happened two or three mornings. And I said, you're cooking your breakfast. He said, well, you've cooked it for me all these years. I figured at least I can do is cook one.
Good for you.
We're about 4 or 5 months into this cooking your own. He says one morning, I'm getting sick and tired of this. I said, honey, you just do it for 50 more years and then I'll take over.
Well, I figured.
And he does. Cook his own.
I figured. We raised 4 kids. She worked. She had 3 meals a day.
And lambing all the time.
And I figured it was time for her to cut her down. If I can't cook my own breakfast, I should go home.
And when it comes to supper, unless he's out doing physical labor, you know, we just sort of dig around, find whatever you find.
Post toasties or something like that. Cornflakes are pretty good for supper.
Hot dogs.
Or vegetables. We eat vegetables.
Okay, you've been farming here. What changes came about in the 50s and 60s to your farming?
Well, one big thing, I would say, was the difference in tractors. Cabs on tractors. We talk about it quite often, about how did we ever stand without cabs on tractors. I can remember in weedy places, the bugs would not drive you insane. The sweat beads, you know what a sweat bead? You'd be driving along, turn a corner, one of them be here. When you doubled off your arm, up here on your neck. And the dust, I don't know how we all can even breathe. They're talking about how they want clean air. How do we all live with all that dust all the time, breathing that dust? They're talking, I don't know if you people heard about it. Somebody mentioned something about it. We need to have a machine that will pick up all the dust from a combine out the field. Have you heard about this? I thought that was the stupidest thing that the federal government, anybody would ever even.
Farmers are making too much pollution, air pollution.
Right.
I don't know what dust is.
Oh, we got to have something to stop this dust. I don't know. Maybe some hoop nanny will think of something, but I don't know how.
Nowadays, if you take the dust out of the field, you won't have a field left either.
My goodness. There we've been farming, people have been farming for years and smelling this dust. And I haven't heard anybody die.
Of course, now maybe it's changed some, though. Now, and you talked about fertilizing the garden with the chicken manure and that sort of thing. Did you start using fertilizers and pesticides?
we started using fertilizers, and now we don't use them.
When were you using the fertilizers?
Oh, what? The last 10 years? Or two?
They tell us we was one of the last ones to do it.
Okay, when was that?
Because of the Illinois summer college.
See, we always summer college.
What years are we talking about there when you say the last?
I think, didn't Mitchell quit 2 years ago? He said, I'm not fertilizing now. Oh,
okay, so the 10 years prior to 2 years, so sort of end of the 90s, end of the 2000s.
And you know, anhydrous kills all the bugs and the worms in the ground. Mm-hmm. What makes ground porous? Worms. And we're killing them all. The only thing that we have to spray is alfalfa weed. You've probably heard about this. They're terrible. They'll kill alfalfa. And we're having trouble. I just mentioned pastures a minute ago, but we've got bull thistle. And I'd say bull thistle has been here 25 years. I can remember when I had 6 plants down the pasture and I couldn't figure out what they were, and I dug them out. And from then on, everybody had bull thistle.
And Bill and Mitchell dug for years trying to get on top of it. We just, and 2 months in the pasture over here that the water runs down through.
And finally, we just got a spreading point. And I hate that there ain't nothing that'll eat that crap. And what's that other?
Musk
thistle even worse. Musk thistle is a plant that'll grow up in one stem and it'll get 4 or 5 feet high. And if you don't do it, there ain't gonna be no pastures. They'll take the pasture. We're just getting the sprayer and everything ready to go. We'll use a four-wheeler and I drive around the pasture all summer long. If there's a bull thistle coming up, rather than spray it with an airplane.
Isolate it.
Just spot spray, in other words.
Yeah.
I've got a four-wheeler out here and I've got 18,000 miles on it. Most of it's up and down the pasture. You can't imagine. Yeah. I ride till my butt hurts. I'm about out of it. I told Mitchell I'm 81. I'm too old to do that anymore. But somebody's got to do it.
I commend you for not using the airplane.
Well, what's bad if your neighbor don't take care of his son? Mm-hmm. If your neighbor don't take care of it, then you're getting rid of yours, but the neighbor, and you know what seed looks like off of that, don't you? It's like a puffball. Mm-hmm. It's like a dandelion. Mm-hmm. When the wind blows, it's all over. And bindweed, when I was a kid, we had a little bindweed, boy, we'd go out and put stuff on it, kill it. Now it's all over the country. You got to spray for it. That's the only reason why Mitchell is spraying our land today is bindweed. That's the only way you can kill it. You got to spray it with.
So in the 50s and 60s, you did not have those pernicious weeds, or you could take care of them by hand.
I think we've had it probably 25 years, and they all said it flew in from Mexico and stuff.
And it comes in a vehicle too, I think.
And it comes from hauling prairie hay and alfalfa and cattle and sheep and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't used to have dandelions in the country.
We didn't have these alfalfa weevil till 25 years ago. Plant an alfalfa, never do nothing to it, just go out there and cut it. Now it's alfalfa weevil. Well, you know about alfalfa.
So 25 years ago, we're talking about 1980 then, right? Or 75, 80, somewhere else?
Used to have a few aphids in it, but aphids would never bother it. And we had ladybugs, too.
We've got more of those now.
Huh?
There were more last year, I saw, than the year.
Well, again, if you're using a pesticide, it would kill ladybugs, but you stop.
Killing their ladybugs. So what do you do? But if you don't spray alfalfa, weevil will take the first cutting and sometimes kill it.
And what about water? Huh? Have you irrigated, not irrigated?
I've never irrigated.
Never irrigated.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that work? How many years do you have a good crop and not a, you know, how does it?
It's been good and bad. But this irrigation thing, you know, they always talk about the shortage of water, and I hope that they don't wait till it's too late till we run out of water. That's all I think about. Now, our wells, pastures, everything has never went down. But, you know, when it stays dry, the water comes from someplace. And, you know, these wells are sucking a lot of water. And I feel like we're kind of lucky right around here there ain't no irrigation. If people are close to that, why, they might lose their water. Our well, every well you drop a plumb bob down, the well is about 70 feet. And drop a plumb bob down about 20 feet below the ground, there's water right there. And so we've got plenty of water here. And fairly good water. Right?
It's better than fairly good.
It's good tasting water.
Okay, and when you were a kid, you said, mentioned once that your dad hired some people for harvest. Was that pretty
standard? Arkansas used to come out by the truckloads and want jobs. And that he hired a couple.
And how about since you've run the farm, do you bring in seasonal help at all? Or
I started having help, but the last help I had, he said he was sick. So Betty took him to town, and we worry about it, so we went to town and said,
no, called his mother.
Called on his mother to see where Joe was. Well, I don't know, he's not here. Went down to the pool hall, he's down the pool hall, so I told Betty, I said, I'm doing it myself. So I just worked from early morning to late.
Well, when our kids were just little, couldn't just walk and leave them, you know.
So I just wasn't going to put up with that.
So when was that? Was your last help? How long ago?
Oh my goodness!
Was that when the kids were?
We would have taken notes if we'd known.
Oh no! You're just remembering.
Joan, that's been so long ago.
Well, I mean, this is when your kids were little or something. I mean, you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not babies.
No.
I mean, I had other things to do, and you sent him get out on the tractor, show him how to do it. Then that afternoon, he's sick, and then you heard what I told you, mm-hmm. down the pool hall drinking beer. I said, I'll do it myself. So I get up when I could just barely see and start farming, the farm till I couldn't see at night. And I just did it myself. And we got along excellent after that.
Now, and do you grow some wheat also?
Wheat, alfalfa,
okay.
Milo.
Okay. Well, that was somebody else mentioned the change in farming, that you used to farm from sun up to sun down, but now the day's been extended because you've got lights on your tractors and you can be.
They don't. Bill never did.
And Bill never did.
You, when it's nighttime, he said it's time to quit.
We don't combine at night either. You know, the good Lord says you got to rest a little bit. And we feel like you should rest so you won't have accidents. The one thing, too, you get tired. But some of these people working all night, all day, and I don't.
That's okay.
Huh?
That's all right.
That's all right for them, but
okay, and Betty, did you always stay home, or did you go to work to supplement the farm income, your sanity? Or
when all the kids were here, we did all our combines. Betty drove a truck. My daughters drove a truck. Mitchell drove one combine there for a while, and I drove the other. Oh, yeah, we did it all ourselves when the kids got older, of course. And Betty drove a truck for years. The girl, Debbie, drove a truck, and Debbie drove a truck for Herbie Cass as far as after Mitchell got older, and Lisa got a little older, so she could take over. And Herbie Cass, she drove a truck for Herbie Cass. I'll never forget. Debbie got a ticket. Well, you know these old trucks, how they used to run. And she pulled up the stop sign and never quite stopped. Nobody coming, so she sneezed on the highway. Highway patroller stopped her. Have you ever stopped at the stop sign? Well, she said, you get going, and you just got to keep it going, or it won't go.
Well, and then to heat up at you.
Yeah.
start up.
Yeah, the heat up, get hot, you know. But I guess you got to take it out of unless you run over. But from then on, she can stop. If she's a little late, she was late getting back with the truck, the tractor, the truck. But we used to haul with pickups. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Pickups. Wheat off out of the harvest field in pickups.
Pickup loads.
And then we had one big truck, an old truck that hold 350, and we'd always keep the pickup going and keep have to drive the big truck in. And Lisa drove the pickup. Oh boy, Lord was good to us.
What were your yields? How many bushels?
Oh, I'd say anywhere from 40 to, I mean, anywhere from 20 probably to 50. We had some hailed out wheat once, when the tornado went through Schmidt. You remember that?
1970.
I got a quarter over here. It was flat as the ground, flat as the ground. It made 49 and a half bushel of acre on the field. It was flat as, one person had to walk in front of the combine from the tin out of the way, and they had to cut just one certain way because it was all flat. And this lady, her shins right here, was just blood from her walking in the stubble, throwing that tin away from the combine. Remember that?
Yeah, we got that custom cut for a few years.
Yeah, we got that custom cut.
Can't complain about it. She just did it.
Yeah.
So that was in 1970 that tornado went through, because that's all we're talking about. Yeah, we just talked about that last night at the library.
That's when it went through Schmitz. We had a round granary on this quarter over there, and it took that round granary and just twisted it up like you take a rag and just twist it like that and put it over on a guy's field. And he come over and he says, "Where the hell are you going to get that granary off my field?" I said, "You can get off yourself. I got it up in my own three truckloads of tin, big truckloads off of my quarter over there." But that was his words. That was terrible, I thought, to say that. Everybody had stuff on the field. Yeah. From Schmitz, clear to my quarter and past. And why he would say something like that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But finally the old grader disappeared up there on the hill.
Did you see that tornado and everything?
No, but did we? I don't remember. But I remember
when
I went over.
Back from Larner, is that the one we saw?
I know we went over to, which one, Charles, or who was it?
Bob.
And I went over there.
That was the next day.
Bob Cross.
No, Bob.
Bob Schmidt.
Oh, Bob Schmidt.
I never felt so sorry for a man in my life. There he stood. With his shed tore down, and branches, and bolts. He was down on his hands and knees, picking up some little things. I felt so sorry. Where did you start?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but there was a lot of people went over there and helped him. Mm-hmm. But that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I think about it a lot in these storms. Here we've lived here. Well, we had this place ever since we've been married, and Dad had it for 29 years. And 30 seconds, it can all be gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's heartbreaking. Just like those people in these floods and stuff. You know, takes all everything we got in the house to take. It's a kind of a cruel world.
Can be. And your son will be taking over, is taking over the
farm? He took over.
He rents our grandchildren.
Yeah, he rents all of that.
Does it look like grandchildren will then take over? Does that
No. No, he's got two boys. They ain't been interested in farming. They're both in Kansas City.
Grandchild, great grandchild. You're going to need to wait for.
So this, like when we talked to Boydman Hink, they had a century farm because it had been in the same family for 100 years. It had been in your family for over 100 years too, right?
Yeah.
But you never filled out the paperwork for the century farm?
I never filled it out.
Never knew anything about it.
See, I bought part of it, and part of it Dad and Mother gave me. And see, originally, there was a house, old house set down here, south this garage, the old house. Mm-hmm. And the old boy that owned the place must have owned several sections all the way around. He was a big sheep rancher. And this house had a porch on the west, on the south, and on the east. So he could get up, and these porches were 6 foot high. And he could get up on his porch and look around at all his land. See, there weren't any trees around here. Betty, I think, looked at that, tried to give you an idea what the old house looked like. And this old house, had a dumb waiter in it. And the people lived upstairs, they had a maid or whatever it was, a butler, whatever it was, gone, and they fixed the food and sent it up on this dumb waiter. And I told Dad, I said, why did you ever tear it down? Well, nobody realized, well, if they could have took care of it today, that would have been quite a thing to look at, you know. And the windows was about this wide.
Okay, he's saying about, what, 4 or 5 feet?
About that wide.
4 feet.
And they went from the bottom of the floor to the top of the ceiling.
No, honey, they were that long.
That long, yeah.
4 feet.
Yeah. And the basement must have been a half basement, they called it back then. You know what I'm mm-hmm. talking about, a half basement. But, I guess that guy that owned all this land around here, he's quite a character.
Who was it?
I had no idea.
You know, I'm
courthouse.
We could probably find out more.
Yeah, we can find out the courthouse
and stuff and try to figure out, you know, who owned what. I can't understand.
Well, I can tell you a little story. I don't know if she knows about this or not, but Vernon told us his dad lived in a dugout, and I can just about point it out to you in that place over there where they're drawing on these. They lived in a dugout for 2 years, and finally they got scared. They didn't think they was on the right property, so that's the reason the place got moved back where it's at. Otherwise, it'd have been right there on the corner, up here.
They figured, yeah.
See, they homesteaded.
We have the papers. I have the papers.
They were afraid they wasn't on the right place. So that's the reason why they pick up stakes and move the place back where it's at down there. Vern took us out there and showed us right where the dugout was.
Well, all I know is I have the homestead papers,
yeah.
And it doesn't say anything like that.
Well, the dugout would be maybe before the house.
No,
well, Vernon told us that.
Well, never mind. We're not going to get into family, okay?
Yeah.
But we have the homestead papers where it shows they had to prove up. It shows where the land was. And they did live in a dugout until they got the house built.
Yeah. Okay.
But it doesn't show them moving. But you can get the homestead papers for this place, and it will show you where everything was and how they had to prove it up.
Yeah, but it doesn't show where the dugout was on the property. That's what he's saying, that the dugout was a
different... See, they wasn't sure they was on the right car. You can't imagine.
And they made
I mean, there wasn't no roads.
Bill. She knows. She's got the papers that say that. We're not going to go any further.
You should have him show you where he says the dugout was. That would be interesting to know.
And you can get the homestead papers for this place.
Yeah.
And it will tell you when it was settled. It will show you where the house was. It will show you if they had a dugout before. Who proofed it up? You had to have proof of residence.
Yeah.
You know, when you homesteaded it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the Carlsons were some of the families that said, yes, my great-great-grandfather was on that property, except when he left for like 5 months to go work someplace.
Mm-hmm.
It tells all of that. It tells
how
all
interesting.
Of that. But you can get the homestead papers.
Well,
so you ask her how to do it in the library sometimes.
Okay.
How to go ahead and
but you
get
can
them.
Do that.
Okay, boy. Woo! we're just, you've got so much interesting stuff to tell us. Churches. Where do you go to church or?
At the church.
And you're the Baptist church. And have you seen changes in the church since the 50s to that?
Oh, I wasn't there in the 50s.
Okay.
We went to the Methodist church.
Okay, you used to go to Methodist.
Yeah. They built a new church. I think that's, it wasn't the building that we never left. And then we went to the Christian church for several years. Just church floaters, I guess, mm-hmm. for a while.
I've done that. Did all the churches back then have full-time ministers? And
yeah, when I was little, our folks took Jelly Night to Sunday school every Sunday. And I don't know where they went. And, yeah, there was always a minister in there.
Yeah, they, we had Sunday school in that white building right south of the church. What was that called?
You went to Sunday school there, too?
Methodist Church.
I never saw you.
Bet you did. But that's where I went to Sunday school. Mrs. Lott was the main character.
It must have been when you fell in love with me.
And what church are we talking about there?
Methodist.
Methodist?
Kinsley Methodist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said you did everything Kinsley. So doctors, dentists, hospital, and all that was Kinsley. That's why we need to maybe interview more with you about hospitals and things. Do you remember anything about health care or the changes that you saw on that? There's a new hospital, was in 1949, right? At, up on 5th Street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I said your children were born?
One of them is Debbie in South Carolina and the rest of them here.
In the hospital?
Yeah. Didn't you get your tonsils out in the doctor's office?
Pardon?
Tonsils out in the doctor's office.
Did you?
Get a what?
Get your tonsils taken out in the doctor's office.
I got my tonsils taken all out from Dr. Armitage right above the... Well, you know where Western Auto is? Mm-hmm. You know them stairs that go up?
Mm-hmm.
That's where Dr. Armitage was. I'll never forget it. One morning we went to town. Mom and Dad said, well, Bill, you're going to get your tonsils taken out.
It was above the jewelry store. There was a jewelry store up above.
Well, that's where Wes was, I think, years before. Wes' grocery store was right there, too. See, the Western Auto, and then right across the right alley, that stairs on the outside.
Oh, I'm going the other way. Okay, yes.
That stairs goes up there.
Okay.
That's where the doctor's office.
Okay.
His name is Doc Armitage.
Okay.
And all I could think of, I'd get all the ice cream I could eat, and I couldn't eat any ice cream after he took my tonsils out. Right there in the office.
And how old were you about then?
Probably 5.
Just a little guy.
Yeah. But I was scared to death.
No. Yeah. Why? Why they didn't tell you till they were in the car? let's see here.
Doctor. You remember?
No, we've done research and I remember Dr. Armitage. The doctors moved quite often.
Dr. Armitage was the one that used to drive to Dodge City to do doctorate up there also.
Oh, he did?
Yep.
Okay.
He sure did. And they always said how fast he could make it to Dodge City. With what kind of car, don't even remember what it's called. Terraplane or some big fancy automobile back then. But he could make it to Dodge City in 40 minutes or whatever it was. I don't know.
Okay, well, living out here, one other question that we usually ask people, but living out here in the country, you maybe don't have a lot of input, but we were asking about minorities in Kinsley, the Hispanic community and the Black community.
We don't have any trouble.
There was just the Winchesters.
Yeah, they were nice people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything else before we summarize? You got some questions? Oh, you have. I guess, is there any other changes you saw, in that period, in the 50s and 60s until now? Anything you'd like to mention?
You were saying something about farms.
Okay, yes.
I just mentioned tractors. Right. My goodness, there's tractors now that looks like a locomotive. Mm-hmm. They pull 50-foot tubes. Well, remember big farmers. We don't have that kind of stuff. Our tubes are 20 feet. Combine is not a big combine, 30-footer, but now, I mean, it isn't nothing for them to work 300 and 400 acres a day with one tractor. And I can remember when Betty and I, we had a John Deere tractor, and it'd take me, probably a long 2 days to work 80 acres. Now they work 300 and 400 a day.
Think how long it took them with a horse.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the changes.
We have the changes in the tractors, and then we talked a little bit about the pesticides and fertilizer and water, and you talked about changing what you were growing, yet you went to sheep because it was more profitable than the cattle.
And for the kids.
And for the kids. Yeah. Is there any other changes in crops that you did, or have you made any?
Well, not really. We've always raised milo and wheat and alfalfa.
Yeah, we used to have about 20 acres of alfalfa.
Yes. Yeah, 20 acres now. We've got, I don't know how much he's got now.
That's all you can handle.
Huh? What'd you say?
That's all what farmer can handle.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Did you tell us that, did you ever, your father, have milk cows where you took the cream to town and the eggs to town?
Yeah, and also they used to send cream to Trinidad, Colorado. I don't know if you ever heard of that or not.
On the train?
On the train. We take it to the depot, and we take another can the next week, and here's our can to be sitting there on the dock, ready to come back home. Trinidad, why I remember that, I don't know. Trinidad, Colorado.
Now, did any of that go on after you were married, or was this all?
No.
Okay.
Well, Betty, I think they had a great A milk. Didn't you?
No, before that we just went to Trinidad.
Oh, okay. And all the skim milk got fed to the hogs. There wasn't nothing wasted. Mm-hmm. We'd always make a mash out of milk and grain, you know, stir it up with a paddle in a big tub, and then dip it out and feed it to the pigs.
Must have been fun in the winter time.
Well, the thing about it, I think, we didn't know any better. Yeah. It was just, that was just life. That's what you had to do. I mentioned to I think it was the kids once, Lisa especially, what we used to do before we went to school. Oh, Dad, I could have never did that. And I said, oh, yes, you could. They can't imagine that, you know. Going out and milking. Coming in and breakfast. That's what's wrong with the kids today, too. They need a good breakfast.
And was your main meal the day at lunch?
Main meal, a lot of times, was at dinner time in the summertime.
And that means
but our main meal, a lot, lunch. Too, was breakfast. Yeah. It was a big breakfast.
And then supper was
and so
later.
Was supper, the main meal.
Yeah.
Oh.
We had three big meals.
Three big meals a day.
Right, the people worked back then.
But dinner was the biggest. Lunch.
Mm-hmm. As we're talking here, son just mentioned today. He said, "If it don't have a seat on it, it ain't gonna get done today." So scoop shovels are out and all that stuff.
Something has changed. It's closed. The fact that. I remember my sister got this very warm coat. It's called a Chesterfield. Mm-hmm. It's deep green with a fur collar. My gosh, you put it on and you just couldn't move. I mean, yes, it was warm. You know, it was wool. But it was so heavy. And just that little standard, you know, kind of satiny lining. Mm-hmm. Clothes are lighter weight and much warmer.
Oh, talking about
much
clothes.
Much lighter weight.
Betty made old girls dresses.
Oh, yeah.
She made all the girls' dresses when they were, you could buy their patterns for like 10 cents or something, and she'd make the girls' dresses.
Now, did you use the feed sacks? And
no,
is that before you?
I wore and slept on feed sacks,
okay.
But no.
My mother used to make bed sheets out of 4 feed sacks, short sew them together, and I imagine most everybody did.
We couldn't
bought
sleep
feed
on those now because there'd be a seam there.
I guess it's pretty good material. I don't remember.
Well, yeah, it was good material. Yeah.
Oh, let's
see. Sometimes it's for the better, and sometimes I don't know.
Are you sure you didn't have a Miss Henshaw down at the annex? There was 2 Miss Henshaws One was an old Miss Henshaw who was very crabby. Was a young Henshaw. You sure you didn't have one down there?
Well, I know. Only thing I can remember, Agnes Horak was me.
Depend on if she had a fight with.
I don't know what I did, but she slapped me across the face one day and knocked me plumb out of the seat. Okay, that's something else. If that had happened today, what would have happened?
Fired.
Aren't you been in?
And I don't know if the folks even knew about it. If they knew about it, I'd have gotten my butt paddled when I got home, too. You did something you wasn't supposed to, or she wouldn't have did it. That's what's wrong with kids, the teacher. But maybe they did. Maybe it's too severe on kids. Maybe that's the reason it stopped. They beat them too much or something. I don't know. But I can remember in Northside School, why the office is, well, the 6th grade is on the north, or the southeast corner, and the office, there's an office right, and I can remember her taking kids in there and hearing the paddle hit their butt in there. What they did, I don't know, but I can remember that. I can remember that me and a kid got in a fight out playing football one day, and she went out the north door on the east side, and there she stood with that paddle. It looked like it was about that long.
That's 5 feet.
Plenty of little. It did. And but I don't know what's become of that. We got in there, and I took, well, what he did, the kid, I had a new leather coat, and he tore the cuff or whatever, a little buckle or something, bailed around,
yeah.
Tore off. Why were we playing football? What did you expect? And I don't think anything come of that either.
Maybe she found out what happened, and that's what.
But I often wonder what, you know, I often wonder what happened to all those teachers. I know.
They died.
Well, I know.
Well, they did.
How big was your graduating class? About?
I can't remember.
How many of them stayed around? Can you think of how many stayed around here and lived around?
Well, be Maribel, Norman,
Kenny.
No, Kenny didn't graduate with us. And,
a whole lot of them.
Were there quite a few?
Oh, Beverly. Donna Kay. What was it? Dolores Taylor. There was quite a few staying around here.
Well, your class probably had 50, 40?
Get the book and tell
them. No, we can do that. But
no,
anyway.
They probably had 40-something, I'm sure.
So, but then you've only gotten up to, say, maybe a half a dozen that actually stayed here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well?
I'd say half a dozen. Well, you know those people, I just named.
Hey, even, I'm sure you've been in the Taylor house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that woodwork everywhere and those building cabinets. It's just.
So.
It's for sale.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
No, I couldn't move away from here. No. This is home.
Well, I could.
Well, you go ahead. I'm
So, how has Liv been here in Edwards County on the farm? How did that affect your life? Or how do you feel about the fact that you've spent your 80 years here?
Totally satisfied. I wouldn't have any other one. I've been very happy with what I did. I was always happy to get up in the morning and go to work. And you hear some people say they just hate for Monday to come, they got to go to work. And I was never that way. I always loved to go to work. And there for a while, I worked out in the shop, too. What are you doing over there?
Every day, you was...
I've been totally happy every day. Just when she provokes me like
don't
she is
show
now.
It.
Or when you were birthing 400 lambs.
No, there for a while I did. I worked in the shop for quite a while. I made the kids different things.
After you retired.
Yeah, after I retired.
Made really neat stuff and then he just quit.
I couldn't stand on the legs that long anymore. Oh, I made that thing for the general. How is that? Did that do any, did that crack worse?
The stand that we have the Atlas on.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. It's still fine. We're still using it.
We're using it.
I hated that.
Well, gives it
but
character.
I didn't know anything about oak when I built
it. It gives it character.
And I talked to somebody and said, oh boy, you got to be careful when you buy it. It's got to be bought dry.
Dry,
yeah, but they weren't surprised at all.
And he said, our bookworm has, opened up a crack.
I saw that the other day when I came in.
So it wasn't dry when they, would they use that? And that's all laminated.
You've got to have that. They run it through what is it called and dry it before they ever build it. I forget who I talked to about that. About
Jerry Anderson? He might know.
It seems like somebody overlooked us or something.
Well,
and they said, oh, you...
No, but it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's
not falling apart. Mm-hmm. It'll last for years and years and years and years.
Okay, the decrease in population in Kinsley. That, that's made a lot of changes.
Yes.
From,
There just isn't enough Kinsley to hold for young folks here. That's what's wrong.
Well, a decrease in farms.
Decrease in farms? They're all big. One man, like I said, farm all his ground himself.
No, I'm talking about there not being houses around that people
live
in.
Yeah, not big houses around. Well, that's what I mean, big farms.
And they're all gone.
Now, we've got, of course, Doc down here. He don't farm. And the people right north there a mile don't farm. I tried to pick the farmers. Brother Kirkwood, he farms right down east here. And, of course, I.O., where I.O. lives. The boys farm. And then Steve's got a farm down here where, who used to live there?
It isn't Vitalman's.
Irwin. Irvin used to live down there.
Well, anyway.
I don't think so either, but that's all right. This is. Because that should have gone off.
A long time ago. Yeah. I haven't changed it. I haven't done anything.
I collected for either heart or blood.
It must have stopped and we didn't hear it when it stopped.
Toenails or something sometimes. And after I took my envelope in, after I started collecting, I told him, I said, I won't do this again. I said, if you want me to do the area, fine, but I'll just write you a check, and I'll be money ahead.
Yeah, that's what I, they want to collect on
people
my
block. People weren't home, either.
They're not home, they don't care, just write a check, and I don't even do that anymore. I can't.
Somebody else could take
over. Part about those school districts, I could never understand. I went to school at Edelton. And Alma lived up her door about a mile. And she went to District 12 because it was a different district.
That's right where the line was.
That's where the line was.
Yeah, but they went up there. Mm-hmm.
And then there was Badger Hill up there, too, mm-hmm. And I always wondered, I said, Alma Hartford never went down to the school. Well, that was the line, I guess.
Just like this is the line for Pawnee County and Edwards County.
Yeah.
Hey, did you have toilets in in Middleton?
Yeah.
Indoor toilets?
Yes, ma'am.
Running water?
Yes.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I don't know, maybe you guys don't know, but the toilet seats, they was up off of the grew about that much, and what set down on them, the water ran.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know, I understand, but I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
When
you set on them, the water ran, and it went right straight down. I don't know how far, and they had, must have had a septic tank, and they must have had a trap someplace, or something terrible, you know, someplace. Oh, yeah, we had the...
they were oak seats, the dark...
Yeah. I'm sure.
Right. You know what I'm talking about, that?
Mm-hmm. I do. I'm old.
Now, you see real old, and you know, the tank was clear up here, and you pull... Mm-hmm. Well, these, it was different than that. But it... From what we
heard... Running water out of a faucet.
Pardon?
And water running out of a faucet.
You turn on a faucet to get your water in the school?
Oh, no, we had a fountain.
A drinking fountain?
Yeah, we had a drinking fountain. We'd come in the hall after recess and line up and drink out of a fountain.
They had running water.
We had it made, kid.
I remember at Lewis, there was like four or five drinking fountains all together. You know.
Different heights?
Oh, well, no. They were all the same, and so four or five kids could get a drink of water at the same time.
That's the way it was in the north side school, on the north side of the building. You know what I'm talking about? There's four, and when Reese was there, boy, there's four fountains there. They ran all the time.
And inside, you didn't have just one, you had several. Yeah. South side was probably the same, but I never went there.
Well, at our school, we had a bucket. And a dipper in it, and everybody took a drink out of the dipper.
Now, where did you go to school?
Anderson, number 3, just across the road.
Oh, that's right. All right, sure. We just had to cross this road, you know?
Yes.
Betty always hated it because she had to go home for dinner. She wanted to eat lunch with the kids. But she just lived across the road.
That's right. I should have known that.
Okay, well, let's wind this up here. What do you see for the future of Edwards County? How do you see things?
Well, Joan, the way the world's going, I tell you, I just don't know what's going to happen. The way they're rioting all over, it's going to possibly get close to us one of these days, I'm afraid. And now down south here, I don't know. I really don't know. I worry about it. I watch the news. Betty won't watch it because she don't want to hear that stuff. But things are going on that... We got something to think about.
Do you think the farms are going to even get bigger and become more corporate farms?
I think so.
I think they're going to become government farms.
Yeah, I think so. In the future, it'll be government farms probably. If it keeps it going like it is now. Now, just like we've got a problem. Now, this fuel, you know, going up. I just can't imagine putting $4 or $5 fuel in a tractor going out here farming. Mm-hmm. And well, I don't know how people are going to make it. That's the reason why we're talking about either that or the rich people are going to own it all. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, we're not big farmers here, but some of those people, Larry, my brother, works for Midway Manufacturing, said some of those people up in the north, North Dakota, or 5, 6, 7,000 acres. He said they might have you drive in their yard and you think it's a machinery place to buy machinery. They got that much machinery. He said it is nothing to have guys get stuff that's 50 to 90 feet wide to farm with. Well, that's unheard of.
Well, they just... They don't want to farm a lot. They just want to farm what's next to them. That's all, man. That'd be enough.
I'll tell you, when I got this place bought, when Betty and I got this place bought, I was so tired of being in debt. I'll never forget the day we paid it off. The guy told me, "You're making a mistake. You ought to keep buying money." But when you're satisfied with what you got, why go more? That's the way we felt.
What year about did you pay it up?
Pardon?
What year was that?
80.
In the 80s?
Seven, probably.
Something like that.
Well, and thank God that you, a person's satisfied, you know? Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we talked about it before. Boy, it would be wonderful if we could own this place someday. Well, when you're satisfied, why stick your neck? I could have bought more land easily. Mm-hmm. Right around here close. But why do it when you're satisfied? The only thing bad about it is money ain't worth anything anymore. That's the trouble now. My goodness. Money ain't worth anything without you having got it, and then it's worth a lot.
That's true.